అనుకూలో మహేశ్వరః దేవీ వా విముఖీ గౌరీ రుద్రాణి గిరిజా సతి
Durbhagaya, who is unfortunate, na, not, may, with me, dhata, the Creator, Lord Brahma, na, not, anukulaha, favorably disposed, Mahaishwara, the great Lord Shiva, Devi, the goddess, Va, or Vimukhi, turned against, Gauri, Rudrani, the wife of Rudra, Girija, the adopted daughter of the Himalayan mountain range, Sati, who in her previous life, as the daughter of Daksha, chose to give up her body. I am extremely unfortunate, for the Creator is not favorably disposed toward me, nor is the great Lord Shiva, or perhaps Shiva's wife, Devi, who is known as Gauri, Rudrani, and Girija, and Sati has turned against me. Purport. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains that Rukmini might have thought, even if Krishna wanted to come, he might have been stopped on the path by the Creator, Brahma, who is not favorably inclined toward me. But why should he be unfavorable? Perhaps it is Maheshwar, Lord Shiva, whom on some occasion I did not properly worship, and who thus became angry with me. But he is Maheshwar, the great controller, so why would he be angry with such an insignificant and foolish girl as me? Perhaps it is Shiva's wife, Gauri Devi, who is displeased. Though I worship her every day, alas, alas, how have I offended her so that she has turned against me? But after all, she is Rudrani, the wife of Rudra, and her very name means one who makes everyone cry. So perhaps she and Shiva want to make me cry. But seeing that I am so miserable, about to give up my life, why don't they soften their attitude? The reason must be that Goddess Devi is Girija, an adopted daughter, so why should she be soft-hearted? In her incarnation of Sati, she gave up her body, so perhaps she now wants me to give up my body also. Thus the Acharya, with realized poetic sensitivity, interprets the various names used in this verse. Om Ajnanti Nirandasya Jnananjana Chalakaya Chakshurun Militam Jena Tasmai Sri Guruve Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Tadatishva Patantikam Pandeham Sri Guru Sri Juta Padakamalam Sri Guru Vaishnavam Sri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunathan Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Sri Vishakan Vitam Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prishtaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Nitti Namine Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pricharine Nirvishesha Shunyavari Paschatyadishatarine Vanshakalpatarubhyascha Vipasindubhya evacha Patithanam bhavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo namo namaha Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nitananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Sri Vasari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama Rama Rama
I am extremely unfortunate, for the Creator is not favorably disposed toward me, nor is the great Lord Shiva, or perhaps Shiva's wife Devi, who is known as Gauri, Rudrani, and Girija, and Sati, has turned against me. Krishna the Supreme Personality of Godhead arranges this entire universe and he orchestrates his own blessed Leela simply to increase the opportunity for loving exchange between his devotees and himself. The gift of Krishna consciousness is so infinitely precious. It is such an invaluable treasure. Nothing in this entire creation can in any way even begin to compare. What does material nature have to offer us? Birth, old age, disease, and death. And between these various stages, there is some happiness and some distress in the form of some sort of prosperity
or physical health, or wealth, family, distinction, friendship, various friendships and alliances. We try to find pleasure and security in a world where ultimately pain and insecurity is the very nature, and this nature will never be changed. Mamupeta tukontaya punar janma nividyate tukalayam ashashvatam natnavanti mahatmaram samsidim varamangata. That this world is a place of misery. And there's no science, there's no technology, there's no philosophy, there's nothing that can change that. And to try to find lasting pleasure in a place of misery is like trying to keep dry when you're drowning in the ocean. It's simply not possible. There is no chance. Pleasure in this world, Srila Prabhupada used to say, is really just a temporary relief from the anxieties. But they come back again and again and again. And we can make all our endeavors and all our arrangements, but nothing works. We can conquer all directions, become great kings, but the same basic sufferings will be upon you if you're just a beggar in the street. There's really not much difference. There's slight difference in form, but in essence, the same miseries are for everybody. But Krishna consciousness is the ways and the means by which we can understand that there is something beyond this material nature. And it is accessible to everyone by the grace of God. And when a devotee wants to be relieved from the pangs of material existence, it's not that in the process he will be free from suffering. Everyone has to suffer. Do not think if you take to Krishna consciousness, however serious you may be, that you will not suffer. You will suffer. As long as you have the slightest tinge of bodily conception of life, you must suffer. Whether you're a devotee, whether you're not a devotee, an atheist, suffering is inevitable. Frustration and disappointment, lamentation is inevitable. But a devotee tolerates that suffering for the higher purpose. Just like taking medicine causes pain, and remaining diseased causes pain. If you're sick, you're going to be in pain. There's nothing you can do about it. But if you take the proper medicine and take the proper precaution, enduring that pain purifies you and relieves you. But simply continuing on in your diseased condition, you may suffer the same. But it perpetuates the suffering. So we have to be mature and sober if we want to follow Krishna consciousness throughout our entire life. Because Krishna consciousness is not something very cheap that you do for a few days or for a few years and you expect some results, some magnificent, extraordinary results. Not so cheap. Krishna consciousness is something that you have to be willing to commit yourself to follow strictly for every day for the rest of your entire life, however long you live. And you may have to endure suffering, disappointment, and heartbreaks throughout your life as a devotee. But you have to have faith that it's the medicine to free you from the perpetuation of your chronic attachment to material existence. And Krishna, sometimes when he appears directly in this world, impersonally, he gives devotees Krishna consciousness in a very wonderful, sudden way. Like in the story of Jagayan Madhai, which we narrated a few days back on Sri Nityananda Prabhu's appearance day. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Nityananda Prabhu gave them ecstatic, pure love of God and utter liberation within an instant. That is called Kripa Siddhi. But we cannot expect that. We are sadhanas. We are searching for sadhana siddha. That through our patient and faithful execution of the regulative principles of devotional service, by performing the austerities of humbling ourselves before the word of Krishna and Guru, that we will achieve the grace of Krishna. And gradually we become purified. Sometimes we read in the scriptures about how Lord Chaitanya gave love of God so quickly. When there was a kirtan, the tailor of Srivas Thakur, who was actually an outcast, he wasn't even a follower of the Sanatan Dharma religion. He was a fallen soul. He just happened to see Chaitanya Mahaprabhu dancing. But because he was dear to Srivas Thakur, that was his only qualification, he was dear to Srivas, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu just revealed his divine form right before him, and within an instant he became a pure, liberated devotee of Krishna, dancing in divine ecstasy with the eight transcendental transformations of ecstatic love. And Narayani, the daughter of Srivas Thakur, the niece, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when she was only a four-year-old child, she hardly knew what is the philosophy of Bhagavad Gita or Srimad Bhagavatam. She hardly knew the value of sadhu satsang. She was only a little child. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gave her his own personal Mahaprasad with his own hands. And one day he said, Narayani, chant the name of Krishna. And she began to cry, Krishna, Krishna. And tears flowed from her eyes and her limbs trembled and she fell down in ecstatic love. So we have been chanting the name of Krishna for so many years. Why are we not receiving the same mercy as Narayani? Because after all, the spiritual master is the representative of Krishna and he's giving the same mercy. He's giving the same mercy, but we have to understand that through the process of bhakti, the spiritual master trains us in the ways and the means that we can purify our life and go back home, back to Godhead. But when the Supreme Lord personally comes himself, he comes to display such miraculous feats that nobody else could possibly do. It's just like a doctor. If you're very sick, he will give you some tablets. And those tablets, you may have to take 2 tablets 3 times a day for the next 21 days. And by doing like that, you gradually get better. But when the doctor personally comes to your house, he can give you an injection and you're better instantly. Correct? In the same way, through his empowered representatives, Krishna gives us the tablets by which, taking regularly through our entire lives, we will gradually become cured of the disease and become Krishna conscious. But when Krishna comes directly and personally in this world, he gives the injection. Or instant relief, instant result. But no one can do that except Krishna himself. So therefore, we must understand that Krishna consciousness is a lifetime affair. And we have to be willing to commit our life until we die, willing to undergo any tribulation or pain in the process and never give up. And Krishna knows your heart. If he knows that you're willing to give your life and continue taking the medicine of practicing devotional service, beginning with hearing and chanting, then his mercy will be upon you and he will gradually reveal himself at his convenience, not at yours. But if he sees that we want something cheap, that we want to try something, and if we don't get some instant results, then we'll go on to the next thing. Krishna won't give you much of anything because he sees you are insincere. Krishna consciousness is a process of surrender. And surrender is not something you do for a while with some expectation. Surrender is something you're willing to do forever. Not only in this life, but a devotee who is qualified to really receive Krishna's mercy, that devotee, he vows within his heart, before the deity, before the guru, that I'm yours forever. Not just this life, forever. If it takes me millions of births to become purified, I'm not going to give up. I'm not looking for something cheap. Guru Maharaj condemned people who gave cheap things. There are many mystics, especially here in India and all other parts of the world as well, no doubt. By touching you between the eyes, they can reveal to you brilliant white light, ambrosial tastes, celestial sounds, enrapturing feelings that just like waves going up and down your body. That can be given. But they cannot give you devotion. They cannot give you love of God. That cannot be given so cheaply. And that's what we want. We don't want mystical experiences. We want eternal service. Mystical experiences Krishna gives very cheaply to anyone who just approaches the right yogi who has those powers. There's no qualification. But if you want devotional service, eternal service, you have to pay by being willing to dedicate your life forever to get that. And to be willing to do anything for it, tolerate anything for it, and accept that Krishna is in control and I am willing and ready to reciprocate with any way he wants me to serve him in any condition of life. Until we have that platform of consciousness, we cannot receive real bhakti. Here we find Rukmini. She is the goddess of fortune. And she's appeared as a very beautiful young girl. And in this lila, we must understand that this yogamaya potency of Lord Sri Krishna even covers the infallible knowledge of the goddess of fortune just to increase the ecstasy of love. try to understand that when devotees read these pastimes, their hearts weep how Rukmini is going through this kind of turmoil. Now, it is not that she's just pretending like a stage actress. If you go to a cinema and you see a woman, she's crying in separation of her beloved, you may cry watching it because you're completely illusioned by this crazy plot that's being revealed before you. But actually, that actress probably couldn't care less about that guy she's crying for. She probably hates him. It's the way most people are in the material world. But she's pretending to cry for him. Either that, or she's pretending to cry in separation when she knows that right after she pretends to cry, she'll have some affair with him. That also happens. But it's all just pretension. There's no reality to it. The Krishna's pastimes are not like that. When Rukmini is crying for Krishna, it's because by the divine potency of the Lord, she actually feels that she's going to be married to Shishupal, a fate worse than death. And here she is in such a state of utter humility. She's weeping, she's crying, and she's praying, "What have I done wrong?" Sometimes when devotees, they do not get the results of their own Krishna consciousness, they find some fault in Krishna. Or they find some fault in their guru. Or they find fault in the Vaishnav satsang. Or they find fault in the path of bhakti. Rukmini, she was not getting the result of her prayer and her longing of her life. But she's not blaming Krishna. She's blaming herself. She's saying that maybe Krishna was preparing to come here to answer my prayer, but he saw something contemptible in me, and therefore he doesn't want to take my hand. And for that I cannot blame him. Or perhaps I'm just so unfortunate that I've created some offense to the Lord, or I've created some offense to his devotees, like Lord Shiva, or like Lord Brahma, or Devi. Maybe it's because of my offenses to them, to his devotees, that he's abandoned me. This is the mentality of a devotee. They take a humble position and they understand, if there's any trouble in my own spiritual life, if there's any inadequacy in my progress in Krishna consciousness, it's not because of Krishna or because there's something wrong with the path or the satsang. It's because there's something wrong with me, because I'm committing offenses, because I'm contemptible. This heart attracts Krishna. So Rukmini here, in a state of divine ecstasy, in the anguish of separation, she is what we might say suffering. What is she suffering? That a fate worse than death is only a matter of moments to be upon her. A fate that is irreversible once it takes place. Rukmini was the most beautiful, the most pure, and the most chaste of young girls. And in a matter of moments,
her hand is about to be given to Shishupal. In those days, and in these days, for a woman that's chaste, for a man to even touch your hand, you're finished for life. No decent man will ever look at you. So much is touching. This is the standard of the Vedic society. Rukmini was protected, so no indecent man ever looked upon her body before. You know the story of Bhishma. When he went to bring those three young ladies, Ambala, Amba, Ambika, one of them already gave her heart to someone else. So Bhishma understood, we cannot marry him. We cannot marry her to our grandson, our nephew, whatever, because she already gave her heart to someone else. But then when she went back to that other person, he was a great prince, and that prince, he worked so hard in that Swayamvara to win her hand, but he said, "You, Bhishma touched you. I can never look at you again." This is the standard of a pure society. So Rukmini is about to be put in the hand of Shishupal and married to him. That means an irreversible fate that cannot be changed. There's no question of divorce. There's no question of finding somebody else. Shishupal was an envious demon, a demon that she despised. She didn't despise him in a mundane way, but she despised the envy within his heart. She loved Krishna, and Shishupal was the worst enemy of Krishna. And her own father and her own brothers were surrendering to the side of the enemy. And she was helpless. There's nothing she could say to convince her father or brothers. There was nothing she could do except pray, "Krishna, save me." And in that utter desperation, she sent that message through the Brahman to Krishna that you must come on this very night or it's too late forever. Please come, Krishna. My heart is longing for you and only you. I am your eternal servant. Let me not serve anyone else at any time. This was the purity of her devotion. And it is this type of prayer that is required to attract Krishna to steal us away from the Shishupals of this material existence that are surrounding us at all times, trying to exploit us, our own family members, our own society, nation, everything around us is trying to exploit us and engage us in some other action other than Krishna's service. It is the influence of Shishupal. And what power do we have against all these forces of Maya? None at all. Only if we follow in the footsteps of Rukmini and desperately cry out for Krishna, is there any hope. So Rukmini, she understood that she could not approach Krishna directly. No one can approach Krishna directly. If you think you can, you are in illusion. She approached Krishna through a Brahman,
through a devotee.
She sent her prayers through this great Brahman to bring it to Krishna. And he did. And that is what guru means. That we have a desire for Krishna. And guru brings that desire to the lotus feet of Krishna. He invokes Krishna to come to save us by his prayers. And we require that. So Rukmini sent the message to the Brahman. But she was very impatient and there was no reply. And here she is. She's in her room, unable to sleep, knowing tomorrow morning is that fateful day of my wedding, and Krishna hasn't come. He's late. He's overdue. Maybe he's not going to come at all. Maybe I've made an offense. Maybe I'm just too contaminated, and he doesn't want anything to do with me. In this way, Lord Krishna is increasing the ecstasy of Vipralamba, or love and separation. Why? For two reasons. One is on the spiritual level, the more intensely we turn to Krishna, the more intense is our ecstasy. And in separation, that ecstasy is increased. But in the separation, it also creates a far deeper and more ecstatic experience at the time of meeting. Vipralamba and Sambhoga. Without Vipralamba, there's no meeting to Sambhoga. Without separation, there's no real life in meeting our beloved. And even in the meeting of a beloved, there is always the fear that he will go away. This is the eternal ras of the spiritual world. Whenever we're with Krishna, we're always in anxiety that maybe he will go. And when we're away from Krishna, we're in anxiety. When will he come? In this way, the love of the spiritual world is never stagnant. But this anxiety is actually ecstasy. It has nothing to do with the anxiety of this material world. Anxiety in this world is simply miserable. But the anxiety of the spiritual world, it's not really anxiety, but it's that dynamic principle of ever-increasing thirst for Krishna that keeps things from ever being stagnant. And we read later on in the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam how even after Krishna married Rukmini and 16,108 wives, and he was so wonderful that he expanded himself to live with each and every one of the wives simultaneously, and each one was thinking, Krishna's only with me, and he's always with me. But still, Sanatana Goswami describes how they were always in anxiety, that we know how the gopis love Krishna, and any day he may leave us and go to Vrindavan for them. But that only increased their love, their appreciation, their affection, and their willingness to want to make him happy so he'll never go away. You see, in love of God, there's never a feeling, there's never the feeling of a complete attainment. Love of God is an ever-increasing process where we always feel that there's something else we must do for the beloved. And Krishna, out of his mercy, he arranges such a scenario in the spiritual world where everyone's
in ecstasy of contentness, but not the contentness of complacency. The contentness of being discontent, because we always need to do something more. Otherwise, Krishna might leave us. Because he is free and independent. Of course, the devotee knows Krishna never leaves him. But at the same time, Krishna instills that consciousness just to increase that love. So here we find such a beautiful example of how Krishna is keeping Rukmini in anticipation to the very last possible moment. In fact, when she was coming the next morning, when she was coming out of the temple of Bhavani, the last rite before the marriage is to take place, Shishupal was a matter of inches away from her, and he was surrounded by such people as Jarasandha and Salya and all of the other demons throughout the world. They were all there to protect, because they knew that Krishna may come and steal her, and they were there to make sure that Shishupal marries Rukmini. And she was just within seconds of the closing of that ceremony when Krishna came from nowhere. He just appeared and took her by the hand and escorted her onto his chariot and drove away and defeated all opposition. Krishna likes to put his devotees in such desperate conditions. And if he's going to do it to his eternal consort, Rukmini, he's going to do it to us too. You'll have to pray up until the last moment, up until the most desperate final moment. Then Krishna will come and say, "Yes, come upon my chariot." But he'll only do that if you have such a desperation, or anything that Maya offers to you, you understand. The same way Rukmini looked at Shishupal, we have to learn to look at all the opportunities for material enjoyment in this world that are meant to divert our attention away from Krishna. Material energy will tempt us with so many opportunities and alternatives other than Krishna's service. And if we're attracted to any of them, we're attracted to Shishupal. If Rukmini had that inclination toward Shishupal, do you think he would come and fight that whole war for her? Because she had no inclination. She was praying, "Krishna, take me away from all this." When we have that consciousness, only then will Krishna take us away from all these Shishupal, all of these material allurements. We have to strive and we have to pray to become detached from all these things. We have to pray to Krishna, "Take me away from it all. Take my consciousness, take my heart, steal it for yourself." Krishna's Hari. Krishna stole Rukmini. And Rukmini asked him. In her prayer, she said, "Krishna, the only hope of my becoming your consort is we have to have a Rakshasa wedding." Rakshasa wedding means just abandoning all rules and just coming and stealing me away. She was a very high-class supremely cultured personality. And she was asking Krishna to steal her away like a rakshasa. She didn't care for her family prestige. She only cared about pleasing Krishna. And understand that she didn't want to marry Krishna because she wanted to enjoy Krishna. She wanted to marry Krishna for only one reason, so that she could give her body, mind, words, and life for Krishna's service. There was not the slightest tinge of feeling of romance in the sense that I want to enjoy you. In the material world, romance is exploitation and nothing more than that. It's disgusting. It's except service to Krishna. She wanted her life to be enjoyed by Krishna only. And it was for this reason she was praying. Krishna, accept my life for your pleasure. I cannot give it to anyone else. Is there any questions?
When Lord Chaitanya comes, or when Krishna comes himself, then it is like an injection. But then we are taught that in the Kali Yuga, the holy name is Krishna.
Yes.
So how do we correlate this? Can't the holy name do miracles? Can't the holy name do miracles?
Yes. Can't the tablets do miracles? The same result is achieved. The tablet does the same miracle as the injection. It just takes more time and patience. The holy name is like those tablets. It's Krishna. But he works in such a way that gradually, by chanting faithfully, your whole life through, you become purified and attain the grace of pure love. When Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came, he gave the same, there's no difference. He just gave it instantly. That is why he is the Yuga Avatar. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is not just a Yuga Avatar. In every Kali Yuga, Lord Chaitanya comes. But only once in a day of Brahma does Radha and Krishna come in that form of Lord Chaitanya. Every Kali Yuga, he comes as a Yuga Avatar. But only once in a day of Brahma does Radha and Krishna enter into that divine avatar in his original form. Otherwise, he's an avatar. Similarly, Krishna comes in every end of Dwapar Yuga, but only once in a day of Brahma does the original personality of Godhead come at the same time as that scheduled incarnation. It's mixed. Same with Lord Chaitanya. The Yuga avatar is just an avatar. But this particular incarnation is the original personality of Godhead, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who has appeared. So how rare. And in just this previous Dwapar and Kali Yuga, the original personality of Godhead, of Krishna, appeared. And the original personality of Gauranga Mahaprabhu appeared, tasting the love of Sri Radharani Krishna. So rare, so precious, so inconceivable. And what special mercy they gave. No one else can give that mercy. But that same mercy is available through sadhana, When he comes personally, he gives Kripa Siddhi. But when he comes through the agency of his instruction, his name, he gives Sadhan Siddhi. We have to take the name, and by taking it throughout our life, we will become pure and attain the same goal as Jagai and Madhai. But Jagai and Madhai, they didn't even take the name. Krishna just totally intervened and forced them practically and gave them love of God. So yes, simultaneously one and different. The name is absolutely one with Lord Chaitanya, but that same one personality performs a different lila. When he comes in his own personal present form distributing his name. You understand? In the form of the name, you have to take shelter of it completely to get the full results. But all the same Lord Chaitanya is in his name, but you have to totally take shelter of that name. But when he came in person, he was impelling people to take shelter. He was giving the shelter in a magnanimous way. Why? Just to attract our hearts. Yes?
Maharaj, in this material world, no, people are so much corrupt and selfish. If a devotee, while executing his duties...
Ultimately, the answer to your question is it is the Lord's sweet will. He's not different than his name, but it is his sweet will. And there's no other way to understand it. It is his sweet will, whether he gives the injection or the tablets. Whether he wants you to go through the lifelong process or whether he gives it all to you instantly. It is his sweet will, and he has that prerogative because he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The independent. Yes.
So a devotee sometimes finds that, you know, while executing the principles of devotion and keeping himself up to the principles, he sees that many of the people become his enemy. And he sees everyone around him is turning into an enemy. And it becomes a real terrible holocaust around him. And he finds himself lonely actually. Because of his clean ways of behavior, clean ways of working, those who are corrupt and selfish, they turn against him like anything. Under such circumstances, should devotee pray Krishna and say, "My dear Lord, please save me," or should say, "As you desire, my dear Lord"?
Both. You should pray that, "My dear Lord, please save me," if you desire. But that is the test of whether you're serious about Krishna consciousness, whether you're willing to bear the pain of being rejected by materialistic people. If you're not willing to bear that weight within your heart, then you are simply not really worthy of Krishna's mercy. We should take pleasure when all our material associates are condemning us. We should think, how wonderful. Krishna must be taking me seriously. Otherwise, this couldn't be happening. I must be making some progress. But of course we should act in such a way, as far as are possible, to represent Krishna in a way that people will respect. That is our duty. But nevertheless, people too materialistic will not respect. After some time they might, but initially they will become very against you. And Srila Prabhupada used to say that opposition means we're healthy. It means we must be, if material energy and her representatives are not opposing us, that means we're not really a serious threat to her. That means we're not really making much advancement of getting out of her clutches. When we actually start making progress getting out of her clutches, she's going to send her representatives to oppose us like anything. So it's actually a very good sign. We shouldn't feel good, we should feel very happy. When one of your old associates says, "You are crazy, you are brainwashed, what nonsense are you doing?" You should just feel so happy, you should say, "Thank you very much. Your words are encouraging me like anything to surrender to Krishna more. If a rascal like you is condemning me, I must really be doing something wonderful in my life." You should tell them like that. Why not?
You mentioned that only once a day Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appears in his form as Radha and Krishna. So does that
mean in his original form?
So in the other Kali Yugas, he still comes as a golden complexion.
He comes as Yuga Avatar. Every Kali Yuga, the Yuga Dharma is always the chanting of the holy names in every Kali Yuga, and there's a Yuga Avatar in every Kali Yuga. But the original personality, Krishna, comes in every Dwapara Yuga. It explains in Chaitanya Charitamrita that that's a scheduled expansion of Kshirodakshaya Vishnu. But the original Supreme Personality of Godhead, once in a day of Brahma, takes the opportunity to merge into that avatar of his. And when Krishna is killing demons, it's the avatar. But when he's having lila with his gopis and his friends, he's actually the original personality of Godhead. So when the Yuga Avatar comes to distribute Harinam, he comes every Kali Yuga to distribute Harinam. But once in a day of Brahma, the original form of Lord Chaitanya from Goloka Vrindavan, was eternally Krishna tasting the nectar and the sweetness of Sri Radharani's love, comes at that time. It appears because Garga Muni, when he was explaining to Nanda Maharaj at the birth-giving ceremony, he says, "You come in a red complexion, in a black complexion, in a golden complexion, in a white complexion." He gave four colors. He actually said, "You have come white, red, and gold, and now you're coming black." So it appears like that. But only once in a day of Rama does the original personality of Godhead, Rasaraj, come at that time. That is so rare. And that is the Lord Chaitanya we are worshipping and giving our life to. And that is the Krishna that we are worshipping and giving our life to. You see, every Kali Yuga, every Dwapara Yuga, the Lord comes to reestablish principles of religion and annihilate demons and protect devotees. But only once in a day of Brahma does he reveal the pastimes of Vrindavan.
does he reveal the intimate loving relationships of Vraj Bhumi. And same with Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Every Kali Yuga there's a Yuga avatar that distributes Harinam. But only once in a day of Brahma does the original personality of Godhead come to give the love of Sri Radharani to the world and exhibit these symptoms of the ecstasies of Radha's love for Krishna. That is so rare. How fortunate we are that by the grace of Srila Prabhupada and the previous acharyas, we are being given the most unbelievably precious and rare opportunity for the highest understanding of the essence of all avatars. Yes, one more question.
Maharaj, this has been really troubling me a lot, because whenever I used to open a Bhagavatam to read, I always see that the great devotees of Lord who are glorified are in the reign of Swayambhava Manu's time. That's about 6 months before. I just wanted to ask you, okay, why is it not that the devotees during this reign, present reign of Manu's, are being glorified, and why are the other ones are glorified? Because if you see Dhruva Maharaj, Prithu Maharaj, Priyavrat, all those are in the reign of Swayambhava Manu, and this is the reign of Vaivasvita Manu, the seventh Manu going on. Why is it so?
It's not at all, but many. Because at the time of Swayambhava Manu, it was an age of great piety and religion. But there are many, many stories in Bhagavatam which took place in other Manus as well, various avatars, various devotees. But Shukadeva Goswami, he is Trikala Gyan. He is empowered to know the past, present, and the future. He's the divine personality. And therefore, he is simply extracting the most important stories to bring about an awakening of pure devotional service into our lives. And during the time of Swayambhuva Manu, so many such great personalities were living. So he is citing those stories. He feels that many of the stories of that time are most conducive to our purification in Krishna consciousness. But factually, it really doesn't matter. Sanatana Dharma is eternal. It doesn't really matter when it happened. What matters is what happened. It doesn't matter when Dhruva Maharaj or Prahlad Maharaj or Ambarish Maharaj, it doesn't really matter when they appeared. You're saying like this, but the 10th canto is the major portion of the Srimad Bhagavatam, and he's describing all the devotees of Krishna in Vrindavan, in Mathura, in Dwarka. That was not Swayambhuva Manu's time. So how can you say that the majority is only that? The majority is Krishna Leela and Krishna's devotees. That's a different time. So I can't agree that he's only speaking about one time. He's speaking about all so many times. But what's important is not the time it happened. What's important is the quality of those great devotees' loves and the quality of the mercy of the Lord as it appeared. And if we understand it in that context, then we can gain the greatest inspiration and benefit from it. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. The chanting of the Hare Krishna mantra will give you liberation in any age. whether it's in Sakti Yuga, Treta Yuga, Dwapara Yuga, or Kali Yuga. Kali Yuga is wonderful because there's no other way. Other yugas, there's other ways. That's the only real difference. And because it's so easy in other yugas, people can't take it so seriously because it's just too easy. Because they have too much capacity to do other things. But in Kali Yuga, no one has any capacity to do anything else except chant. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama. And in other yugas, materially things are so nice that even if people do chant or perform their meditations, they don't really have such an impetus to get out of the material world. But in Kali Yuga, things are so miserable. So many diseases, so much pollution. I remember one devotee went to Hawaii and he said, God, it's so heavenly, it's so wonderful, it's so lovely there. He's telling the brahmacharis. This isn't New Vrindavan, it was in the middle of the winter. It was about 20 degrees below zero. Icy snow, no heat, freezing winds, ice cold water you had to bathe in. No proper food, no proper anything. Nobody hardly had a blanket to sleep in. You just tremble all night long. For months at a time, you would not see a trace of the sun in the sky. All you would see is just dark, ominous, gray sky, clouds. Sometimes it's a little lighter than other times, and you know it's the day. And somebody came up to this place. You don't even see a single leaf on a tree for months at a time. He's telling us about Hawaii. The ocean is so warm and nice, and beautiful fruits growing everywhere. We were just eating oat water. It's so nice. Everybody's so happy because it's never too hot, it's never too cold. When it rains, it's just like a light mist that refreshes you. And you don't even have to have money, you just go out, you can pick pineapples, bananas, coconuts, mangoes, papayas, they grow everywhere, beautiful. Everything smells so nice because there's flowers growing everywhere. And he was telling us what a heavenly place it was. And we were freezing cold. All our bodies were diseased. And when we were thinking of Hawaii, it sounded worse than hell. Thinking, what a hellish place. How can you possibly cry out Krishna's name in a place like that? Here, all we have is Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Ram, Ram. There's nothing to distract our attention away from Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram, Ram. Everything we see, everything we feel, everything around us is just inducing us to cry out, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram. We told him, you can go back to your heaven, but we'll take here. This is the spiritual world. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram. Thank you very much.